But thank you for your patience, our Canberra correspondent, Karen Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
More good progress on borders reopening?
Oh, it's starting to feel like Christmas almost, literally and metaphorically, I have to say. Yes, we're getting internal borders easing further and further. Queensland was the sort of big standout state up until this week, and now the Queensland government has said that they will open its borders to Sydney from the 1st of December. And similarly, the New South Wales government is easing restrictions in Sydney and surrounds so that there'll be able to be more people in pubs and restaurants and more people in homes, up to 30 people in private homes, still under social distancing arrangements. So not all homes are going to be big enough for that. But, you know, it's a sign that we're doing well here, as are you guys, and that we may well have if not a totally normal summer, been a near normal summer in terms of social interaction and movement of families to catch up with each other. And there's been very emotional reunions of people flying from Melbourne to Sydney this week. I must say they were greeted at Sydney Airport by some Bondi lifeguards in very small red bathers and some drag queens welcoming them. So, you know,
budgie smugglers are back. It must
be
summer.
Correct. Yeah, with good humour. It's all being said, but it is a relief for many people who've been separated for so many months.
And goodness, if we manage to have, fingers crossed, Christmas is here, we'll be, you know, when you look at what's happening in the Northern Hemisphere, it's just incredible, isn't it?
Oh, it's heartbreaking, yeah.
Yeah.
And we've had a problem. We had a problem in South Australia where we did see a flare up, and the South Australian government came down very hard last week and said, right, we're shutting down for 6 days in the hardest lockdown, harder than the one that Melbourne had even. And then they discovered that they'd been sort of operating off the advice of one man who had said that he had bought a pizza from a pizza shop, and they feared that he had contracted the virus from the box, which was a different form of transmission, and they went into a panic. Turned out he told them a fib, and he was actually working at the pizza place, but sort of unofficially, and had been working multiple jobs. He's on a visa from overseas. He was here legitimately, but that's opened up a debate about the kinds of support people have been offered too, because visa holders here, temporary visa holders, were deliberately excluded from all the income support arrangements. So hence a number of people were working multiple jobs. He wasn't honest about it, and we saw the state shut down. They opened up again after just a couple of days and were embarrassed about it. But, you know, it just shows we are going to get outbreaks and flare-ups. But they are saying around Australia now they feel better equipped to manage them in terms of contact tracing and the like, to and quarantining, just to be able to have that sort of reasonable festive season.
Karen, we spoke to you on Friday, and thank you for that, about this shocking report on what are effectively war crimes, alleged war crimes, some members of the Australian Defence Force in Afghanistan, this following the four-year inquiry. What else has happened since then?
Well, there are a range of recommendations in that report, and the Defence Force Chief, Angus Campbell, did say when he revealed the report that he was accepting recommendations. Well, I guess we're sort of burrowing down into those a little bit more now, but he did admit on the weekend that perhaps there had been too many rotations of Special Forces. They were the sort of go-to part of the Defence Force, particularly for this conflict, partly because of the nature of the conflict, that it was as an insurgency, and they are a force that can operate in small groups on their own. They're highly skilled, highly trained, and very resilient. But they were also chosen going back to 2001 because the risk of casualties was lower with fewer people. You could kind of get more bang for your buck politically in terms of supporting our allies, the United States, by sending special forces. And then governments successively got into the habit of just sending them back and back and back, which was a lot of pressure on those special forces. It doesn't excuse the behaviour of some. It doesn't make you murderers, which clearly some have become, but allegedly, according to the credible evidence in this report. But it may have contributed to a sort of normalisation of an other world and a warrior culture that was not a healthy culture, according to the report. So it's interesting that the Defence Force is now officially conceding that perhaps it should have advised the government against such rotations. And the Defence Force Chief is also talking about accepting specifically a recommendation about wearing body cameras, which would, of course, record things that go on and would hopefully act as some kind of preventative against the kinds of terrible things we're reading about in this report, of planting weapons on people, of summary executions, of blooding, you know, that we talked about on Friday, of junior officers being forced to kill people to get their first kill recorded. Body cameras would, of course, be, you know, make a lot of difference to that. Police have to wear them, and that now the suggestion is that Defence Force will have to wear them. There are people in the Defence Force who did nothing wrong through all this, which we talked about on Friday as well, who are dismayed at some of the penalties being handed out en masse to special forces. And, you know, there's a lot of perspective. Some of their perspectives are emerging as well. But we've seen one of the most high-profile former SAS soldiers, Andrew Hastie, who is a member of Federal Parliament for the Liberal Party and a chairman of a very powerful intelligence committee. He wrote a very evocative personal piece about his experiences in the Special Forces on the weekend, and also talking about going forward how we might need to have some kind of parliamentary committee that oversees the Defence Force as an extra watchdog arrangement, which is an interesting idea. With Parliament resuming next week for the last 2 weeks of the year, I think we'll see some more debate about that idea.
I'm not sure if you can answer, I'm not sure if the information's available, but of those who've been referred for possible criminal prosecution, do we know that whether it is necessarily some of these soldiers who were being blooded, quote unquote, or in some cases will it be superiors who may have overseen this? Do we know?
Well, that's an interesting point, Catherine. The report specifically says that it holds those who ordered the executions, so the more senior officer on the spot, it holds those people more responsible than the people who pulled the trigger. It specifically says that priority for prosecution should be given to the people who gave the orders. And in some cases, it even opens up the possibility that there could be exemptions from prosecution in return for evidence of those more junior officers who were forced to do the killing in some cases in order to prosecute those who gave the orders. And they're really making the point there that this is just, you know, beyond unacceptable that in a hierarchical organisation like the Defence Force, where there is a chain of command and there is responsibility given to people to order others in battle, that those people must do so within the rules of law and the bounds of morality and common decency. So it is an interesting point you raise, and it is one that's been acknowledged here, and it will be interesting to watch as those investigations, criminal investigations, now ensue. We're all, you know, we know that this is going to take a long time. It could take years, and we may not even get any criminal prosecutions, but excuse me, there will be a focus on the giving of the orders, yeah.
We are watching with considerable interest your or Australia's diplomatic communications at the moment with China. This is just, you know, how serious is it getting?
Look, I think it's very serious, Catherine. You and I have talked about this a number of times, that our relationship with China seems to be getting worse, not better, and that constantly there are flare-ups. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry, I've got a frog in the throat.
Not at all.
Morning.
Have a sip of water, a minute, Karen.
Yes, I will. Constantly there have been flare-ups over various issues, most recently Australia deciding to call out the call for investigations into the origins of the coronavirus and criticise China for being too secretive. You know, we've just seen issue after issue. And most recently, China got very exercised about the fact that our Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, decided to fly to Japan to meet the new Japanese Prime Minister, Yoshihide Suga, and to sign a defence pact. Now, it's an interesting decision on Scott Morrison's part because, as we know, all of these meetings lately have been held on Zoom or other devices like that. And to actually fly to Japan in person under COVID-19 arrangements for just a couple of days and then fly back, incidentally, and be in quarantine for 2 weeks, which will require him to attend Parliament next week virtually for the first time for a Prime Minister. He's quarantining at the official residence, the Lodge. The Chinese were very angry about this. Now, relations historically between Japan and China have had their frosty moments, and China took issue with Australia signing a defence pact. And their diplomats, who've been more and more aggressive right around the world, and particularly here in Australia, issued a list of 14 grievances that China has against Australia. So we're really, if we were in any doubt that they are keeping score, we're not anymore. And it's just not clear where this is all going to end. And there's a bit of debate about whether the Australian government has handled it well or not. Certainly they are resolved to push back against this and to not concede to this diplomatic and trade pressure that we've been under. And we've also talked about the trade sanctions that have been imposed. But it's just not clear where the end is and what the objective is in terms of the pushback. And I think certainly people in business in Australia are becoming concerned about where the long-term implications of this are, what they are and where it all ends. But China is not taking a backward step and the relationship just seems to get worse and worse, and hopefully it doesn't get more serious than it currently is, but it's not in a good place.
Karen, thank you. I know you're having plenty of La Nina rainfall. We're having not much else where I am in the country anyway, but the big temperatures hitting this weekend.
Yeah, we've got crazy weather. We've had absolute torrential downpours, and this weekend the weather, well, here in Canberra we're going to have 33 and 34 degrees Celsius. In Sydney they're going to be in the 40s, and we're still in November. So we're all very puzzled by what La Nina is delivering to us. That's 15 degrees above the average. There's been a lot more talk about climate change lately with the change of administration in the United States sort of changing the tone of that debate. And I guess we are going to see that increasing here in Australia as we start to sweat so early in the season and we cross our fingers we don't have the bushfire experience that we had last year. They are worried about grass fires, but hopefully La Nina will do its bit and at least keep us a little bit damp overnight so that we're not at risk of that.
It was this year, I hate to tell you. That's how long 2020's been.
It started early last year. It started in September. True. And it went all the way through, you're right, all the way through this year. Yeah, I've lost track, but it was a horrible experience that we don't ever want to repeat.
I know. We're happy to farewell this year. Hope for better things. Karen Middleton, thanks.
Yes, indeed.
Thanks very much.